Look, I want to take a tour of the Indian of the Sun at the left.
All right.
Now, you know the Sun at the left.
Stands out as a very unusual carbon. It's the it's an exclusive type of a carbon. It's different than any other carbon that we have. And the psukkim about it sounds very strange in the framework of kabbonis that we have. All kabbonis is Hashem, and the kabbonis is you have Zrikas Adam, Agavim Mizbeach, and over here, this sawyer is sent out into the desert, and it's pushed over a rocky cliff to where it dies. Strange kind of a performance for in terms of the framework of the avoda, the base of Mikdash. It sounds like completely out of the framework, the normal framework of Zvachim and Kachim in the base of Mikdash. And the description of the pasuk with regard to the Sar Mishleach is also something that stands out as being unusual. And it says, the pasuk says, "Samachar nashtei yadav rosh asoyer tachai v'svada olav." It's in Perek Tazayin pasuk chavala. V'svada olav is kolavonos bnei Yisrael. So he has to do vidui on the head of the soyer mishtaleach, and that's called peshem l'chol chatosam. The nosan osam al rosh asoyer. She placed the sins on the head of the soyer. V'shilach v'yadish itiam edbara. And he should send it in the hands of a person who was appointed, previously appointed, to the desert. Alright? The pasuk sounds strange enough, but the pasuk continues even more. The Nosa Asoyer Olav Eskolav Onoso Mal Eretz Gezerah. This Sawyer shall carry upon it all their sins to a land of desolate land. The Shilach Asasar Midbar. And you should send the Sawyer in the desert. Yeah, Vashilach HaSar HaMidbar a second time means that he should throw it over the cliff. That's what it means. Vashilach HaSar HaMidbar. That's the way Yonason ben Aziel translates it. So, you know, Chazal said that the Sawyer Mishlech is one of the things that the Umos HaOlam attack us about. One of the things that the Umos HaOlam, that Paraduma also. So why does the question, of course, is why does the Umos HaOlam attack us about it? They have the craziest things. They have the craziest things in this Olam. And all kinds of nonsense. And I mean, speaking about the Umos Olam from way back, and the Jews were the only ones that had a system that's based on Chachma. And the Umos Olam would do all kinds of crazy, most crazy, nonsensical ceremonies, rites that they were involved in. But the answer is because that's precisely why they attack us. Because in Yadus, what we are proclaiming is a system that is based upon Chachma. And it's not based upon the magical type of performances and different rites and mystical emotional activities. But it's really, we're saying that it's a system of Chachma Hashem, based upon Chachma. And that's why they attack us when it comes to the Sar Mishleach. They say, well, what is this? This sounds like one of the things, something that we do. So if they attack the Torah and they say that this is not based upon Chachma, that's the attack. That's why they attack us on the Sar Mishleach. Because the Umos HaOlam say this is similar to the type of thing that we have. And when you look at the Pesukim, you can see why they lodge this taina here, or the paraduma. See, but the Torah says no. There's a specific reason for the for the paraduma and for the sar mishleach. There's an idea here, and while it may appear to the superficial observer as coming from another source, actually it comes from the same source of Chochmah as the rest of the Torah, but a person has to look into it and see what exactly the concept is. And superficially, it lends itself to attack on a superficial basis. All right, superficial level. Now, what is the? So we want to understand what exactly is the sar. What's going on in the sar? What is the sar mishtaleach? Now, everybody seems to agree that the sar mishtaleach has a. There's a certain secret to it, certain sod. Vamar of Shmuel, af pisha kosu b'sar achatas shul Hashem, gam asar mishtaleach hu Hashem. Vein tzarach ki mishtaleach in a korban. So he didn't have to say that the Sar Mishlech is Lashem, because the Sar Mishlech really isn't a karma. Kilo Yishachet, because it's not slaughtered. Then he says, but he realizes this is a strange type of karma. The Im Yacholta Lohovin Asod, Shehu Achar Milas Azazel, Teda Sodo, Vesod Shmo. He says, if you understand the word that's after the word of Azazel, then you'll understand its Sod and the Sod of its name. You'll be able to figure out what the word Azazel comes from. I'll give you a little bit of hint about the sod. When you'll be 33 years old, you'll understand it. And what he means is that if you count 33 psukim from here, from this pasuk, you're dealing with the pasuk of. Where it says that v'lo yizbechu od zivchayim lasirim. Ramban already tells you what he means, what his sod is. So his sod is that it's somehow or other it's tied with the idea of the seirim v'lo yizbechu od zivchayim lasirim asherhem zonim acharehem. Okay, and he says the word. What he means, the word after Azazel is hamidbara. To the midbar, because the midbar is the place where the seirim are. Okay, these seirim, whatever they are, exist there. So, actually, that's what the Ebenezer says. That's all he explains about it. All right, seirim means like ghosts. Okay,
ghosts, not ghosts.
Even though the Ebenezer didn't help us that much, but if we keep on the trail, we can find there's another. Another place where they somehow reveal a part of the secret, and that is in a Chazal, which the Ramban quotes. But I want you to know, we'll take a look at Chazal in a minute. But I want you to know, the Sar Azazel is not just unusual in the way it's structured as a carbon, as Maisa Krovan, the way you makrav, but it also has an unusual property halachically also. Because the Rambam paskins, even though the Rambam doesn't paskin like Rebbe, that Yom HaKippurim is machaper without tshuva, because the Rambam says you need Yom HaKippurim is machaper lashovim, but the Sar Mishtaleach, he agrees is machaper without tshuva. See? Because he says in Perek Aleph Halacha Beis, Sar Mishtaleach machaper al kol avera shebetayra, kalas vachamuras, bein shav bezogim, bein shav bezgoga, bein shav lo, bein shlo adlo, akol miskaper besar mishtaleach, vuhu shasa tshuva. Avalim lo asa tshuva, ina sa mechapolo el alakalos. Mala ina kalos man achamuros. Achamuros is chayv mises bezden, karos. Oshu asho v'sheka. But the kalos is of the other mitzvahs asayim, mitzvahs lo asa. So you see that the Sar Mishtaleach is capable of being mechaper without tshuva. All right? And Rebbe holds that Yom Kippur itself is machapa without you. What I'd like to understand also, besides the Sar Mishtaleach, what's going on in the Sar Mishtaleach, is what kind of a concept is that? That you can have a kapar without you. In no other carbon can a person have a kapar without you. It's impossible. A person is in a shav, so it's a zevach hashram ta'evon, there's no kapar, no other carbon. But in the Sar Mishtaleach, he could be mechaper even without tshuva. How is that possible? And Rebbe maintains even Yom Kippurim itself is mechaper without tshuva. Okay, you could say it's a gzeres hakasav, and I'm not denying that it's a gzeres hakasav. One time I spoke about it, that there's two types of kapara. There's a kapara within the system itself, and then there's a kapara that has to do with the person's human perfection. The Rambam Perek Aleph is talking about the kapara within the system. So you say gzeres hakasav. But there has to be something more to it than just a plain Gzeres HaKasav. The Torah wouldn't just step out of its whole system just like this and just give kapara, just grant kapara for nothing with nothing? There has to be some reason why the Sora Mishtalech has been machaper on the kalos, that's asay and los asay, even without tshuva. Must be some reason for it. Okay? I think if we understand, and also Rebbe, as far as Yom Kippur is concerned. So really, I'd like to explain two things. The Sora Mishtalech, and also why, what's the concept of having kapar without tshuva. Alright? Yeah. Another thing I'd like to understand is the Mishnah in the end of Yuma. The last Mishnah in Yuma. So there's a famous statement of Rabbi Akiva. Everybody knows it. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael. You Jews are fortunate. Lefnei mi atem mitarim, umi mitar eschem, avichem shebashamayim. You see? And he quotes Psukim, Zerach Lechem, Mayim Taharim, and Mikveh Yisrael Hashem. So what is Rabbi Akiva? I always wonder, what is Rabbi Akiva saying? What do you mean? Ashreichem Yisrael lefnei mi atem mitarim, umi mitar eschem, avichem shebashamayim. What does it mean? And if a guy does tshuva, he's not doing tshuva before God. And so what is so special about the Jews? Anybody can do tshuva. A guy does tshuva, it's also lefnei Hashem. So you'll say that but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a special hashgacha towards Klal Yisrael and not towards the goyim. Okay, fine. But that's only one half of the statement, because the statement is like this. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael lefnei mi atem mitarim. Before who are you mitar? And also, umi mitar eschem. Avichem shebashamayim. So if you're going to tell me that he's coming to let you hear that God's hashgacha relates specifically to the Jews and helps them become shovim. Okay, so that's mi mitar. So what does it mean, lefnei mi atem mitarim? How else? How can any human being, every human being is capable of doing tshuva? As long as he's an Adam, he's capable of doing tshuva. He's capable of reaching the highest level possible. Filo Akam Vasakutaris Moshe is Karek Kan Gadol. So what does it mean? And the two psukim, of course, of Vizrak Lechamayim Tarim Tatam means that God is Matar us, and Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, Ma Mikveh Matar Satneh, Ma Fakarish Baruch Matar Yisrael. And that means but in the mikvah, a person has to take the initiative. So what? I mean, so everybody that is the same thing. Gemara is on Daf Pehei Amud Beis in Yuma. Be nice to understand also the particulars of the Sarlaz. Maybe after we go into the main idea of the Sarlaz, we go into some of the particulars as well. Rolla. And then also, what's the Viadish Iti, and what, you know, all the particulars of the Yisrael Azazel. But I think the most important thing, I think, is that if we are able to clarify the Yisrael Azazel, it'll open up the whole concept of the Kedusha Sayyom of Yom Kippur. Alright? Now, the Ramban quotes, as I mentioned before, he quotes this Medrash. Alright, now he says like this. He says this so that the Ibn Ezra is talking about already, our Chazal already spoke about it. V'nasa ha-soyer olav ze'esav shenemar. That's ze'esav, this is referring to Esav. Shenemar hein Esav achi ish soyer. As kol avonosom, avonos tam. Shenemar v'yakov ish tam. Meforish mizeh b'pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, agadol. This is the part. Okay, so it's like this. Leficha ha'yinosnin lo l'samoel shochad b'yom ha'kippur. For this reason, they gave to Samoel a bribery on Yom Kippur. Okay? So Samoel is some kind of a force. Alright? So they used to bribe Samoel on Yom Kippur. Why? Shelo levatel es karbonam. In order that Samoel should not destroy the carbon of the Jews. Shenemar, goral echad l'Hashem, v'goral echad l'Azazel. One goral goes to God, and one goral goes to Azazel. Goral oshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'korban olah. So the goral of God, in other words, the area, the jurisdiction of God goes to a korban olah. V'goral oshel Azazel. No, I'm sorry, that's a mistake. It says l'korban olah. It should be l'korban chatas. L'korban chatas. L'korban chatas. Goral oshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'korban chatas. It's a mistake in the Ramban, or in the source. It should be the car because they're both chatas. The goral oshel Azazel sor chatas. The cholavon oseim shall Yisrael alav. And all the sins of the Jews are on this soyer that's going out into the desert. Shenema the nosu hasoyer alav. Because the pasuk says, see, they call it the pasuk, that the soyer should carry the sins. Ro'ah Samoel. So then, once they gave this bribe to Samoel, so now Samuel saw Shelo Nimtza Behem Chait V'Yom HaKippurim. He took a look and he saw, after he took the bribe, that the Jews don't have any sin on Yom Kippur. Omar Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he said before God, Ribon Kol HaOlamim, God of the universe, Yesh Lecha Am Echad Baretz, you have one nation in the land, Kemalachei HaSharis Sheba Shemayim. These people, even though they live on the globe, on the earth, they're just like the angels in the heavens. Ma malachai asharis yechefe regal, just like the malachim don't wear any shoes. Kachen Yisrael yechefe regal, b'yom kippurim. The Jews don't wear shoes in Yom Kippur. Ma malachai asharis ein b'hem achilush siya, just like the angels don't eat or drink. Kach Yisrael. Ain by machil shi b'yom kippurim. Ma malachei asharis ein lem kfitza, just like the angels don't jump around. Kach Yisrael on dem or glam b'yom kippurim. So the Jews too stand on their feet all Yom Kippur. Ma malachei asharis misvach b'neihem, kachem Yisrael shalom misvach b'neihem b'yom kippurim. Just like they have peace the malachim, so here too the Jews have peace between themselves. Alright? Ma malach asharis nekiyim mekol chayt, just like the angels don't have any sin, kachen Yisrael nekiyim mekol chayt b'yom kippurim. So the Jews too don't have any chayt. Don't have any chayt in Yom Kippur. And he goes on to say, v'akadosh baruch hu shomeya edusan shel Yisrael min hakateger shelem. And God hears this testimony about the Jews from their
accuser,
prosecutor. Umachaper, and then God forgives them. Ala mizbeach, ala migdash, ala kohanim, ala kol amakol. Shenem avachipres migdash hakadosh. All right, that's the medrash. Yeah, the chippers mitzvah is a kodesh. That's all more. That's mizbech yichaper, valakonim valkolam akol yichaper. That's near the end. Hold. Then God grants a total kapar. After that, Samuel testifies in our favor.
See.
But that's only if you give him the bribe. What exactly is this? Medrash explaining. What is who is the Samuel? That's number one. And how do you bribe him?
And what's influenced by what he does?
Yeah, right. Why? But what's strange about it is that Samuel is you want it, originally it says why do you bribe Samuel? So he shouldn't destroy the carbon of Hashem. See? But then it turns out that he did even more than he had to. Not only didn't he destroy the carbon Hashem, but he went and he presented a good case. It went against his nature. This is what sounds strange about the Medrash. It's not so strange about the Medrash that you bribed him. Okay, so he doesn't disturb the carbon Hashem. So let him keep his own business. But it seems more than that. But now this same Samoel, who apparently is an evil type of being, turns around, and he is the one that's responsible for bringing about the kapara. He praises the Jews. What exactly is it? Now, what is Samoel actually? What does Samoel really mean? So Samoel really means, the Rambam in the Moed Avuchim talks about Samoel. And the Rambam mentions a lot of these Midrashim that have these Samoel stories. And they have to do with Bereshis. The Rambam mentions them as a part of the secrets of Yadus. In that area where he mentions, he doesn't give away, you know, the explanation. It's one of those areas in the Moed Avuchim where he just mentions the Midrash, and he says, and now it's interesting to note that Samoel is riding on the camel. That's it. You've got it now.
Maybe
that's
not.
It. That's all. I can't say anymore. But the Rambam mentions this much. He tells us, who is Samoel? Samoel is the son. Samoel represents the son. That's what the Rambam says. Samoel represents the son. And it really comes from the word comes from, this was my own understanding of it, and I saw that there were people that explained it that way, interpret it that way, that comes from the word sumo, and kale. It means the part of man that blinds him and prevents him from perceiving God. That's what it represents. No more. Let's force. Okay. Of course, Sutton really means, and Sutton always represents Zu Sutton, Zu Yetzahara, Zu Malachamavas. It means the part of man that's rooted in the physical. That's rooted in the physical. Man has a lot of expressions, but it's rooted in the physical, and it's the same thing that causes a person to decompose. It's the same thing that's responsible for a person's crazy desires and his Yetzirah, and that's what it is. It's the physical. It's rooted in the physical. Okay. Now, what exactly is the explanation of this Medrash? There's one thing, one clue you do see from the Medrash. What one clue you do have from the Medrash? Interesting clue. Namely, that the understanding of the Sohar La'Azazel really reflects not only on the Sohar La'Azazel, but reflects on the entire Yom Kippur. See? That the Sohar La'Azazel is tied in intimately with the whole concept of the Kaparas Yom Kippur. It's not extraneous to Kaparas Yom Kippur. But the Sohar La'Azazel, in other words, would be impossible to have a Sohar La'Azazel outside of Yom Kippur. That would be impossible. A chatas, an oil, you could always have. But not a Sohar La'Azazel. Sohar La'Azazel is unique because it's integrally related with the, tied up with the concept of Yom Kippur. Because you see that Samoel says to God, you have this one nation. Praises them. Another interesting thing about the Medrash is a little bit difficult point. Because the Medrash says that you want to save the Korban Lashem. Right? But the Korban Lashem is really the Korban Lashem is the Soyer Sohar Panimi. Right? But the Sohar Panimi is a machlekes, the Mishnah was machapa for. But it's not machapa for all the Averis. It's only Tumas Mishnah Shekadasha, the Sohar Panimi. So, but and the Sohar La'Azazel is really a machapa for all the Averis. It's a machapa for all the Averis. So you can't just say, you can't just understand the Medrash literally, that somehow or other you're sacrificing this Sohar for Samoel in order to save the other one. Because the real Kapar Sayom comes about through the very Sohar Mishtaleach. Okay? I think the first clue that we have really for what is going on in the Sohar HaMishtaleach is the very description, the way the Torah describes what exactly takes place with the Sohar HaMishtaleach. That description that stands out in our minds as being so unique, and it's so strange in terms of the framework of the Torah. And what is that? And that's the one that the Medrash quotes also, where it says the Nosa Asor Olav, right? Both Pesukim actually, both Pesukim. First pasuk is that Aaron should place his hands on the. Let's call it the Nosan Osam or Rosha Soir. You should put them on the head of the Soir. That type of a description. What do you mean you take a verse and place them on the head of the Soir? And then the Nosa Asar all of us call of Honosam Alaras Gezera. What really is meant by that? I think that there's one thing that is alluded to by that pasuk. See, what does the pasuk allude to? What is the concept? What does the pasuk allude to? The pasuk alludes to one thing, principle in Yahadus, and that is, you see, the soyer la'zazel, really represents the desire of man, all the desires of man that are not rooted in reality, but that stem from the satan, from his physical makeup, from his imagination, like the Rambam in the Maariv Ochim talks about, from his imagination, from his fantasies. Which is based upon which is rooted in his physical nature. See, that's what's responsible for chait, for avera. What is responsible for chait is basically when the mind becomes confused by reality because the fantasies convince it that this is reality. You see, so that's what the averas obviously represent, and that's why the sawyer is sent out into the desert. And he's thrown over the cliff. See? And he dies a very painful death. Why? Because what the pasuk is demonstrating is the sawyer represents the person who's driven by fantasies. And the person that's driven by fantasies is driven out into a wasteland, which means that it is really unproductive. And he's completely in an unproductive environment, unproductive in terms of reality, but his fantasies don't let him see it. And he runs in this wasteland, and he doesn't realize it. He thinks that he's improving his life, when in reality, his life is deteriorating. Till suddenly, he finds that he's over the cliff, and reality finally asserts itself. In the last moment. A person can avoid reality for a long time. But since reality exists, there has to come a point where reality is going to affect him and make itself felt, and there's simply no more, it's not possible any more for him to avoid it. You see? So that's really what the Sawyer La'zazel symbolizes, typifies. That's what it represents. But But let's understand, why does the pasuk express it that way? That it sounds like, I mean, you take these sins, it sounds primitive, and place it on the soyer, and the soyer carries these sins off into the desert. Why does the Torah express it that way? What is the reason? What lies hidden? What meaning is there in that expression? I say what that expression alludes to is one idea. That the sins of the people are not really inherent in their nature. That's what it alludes to. In other words, if I could take the sins and I could place them on the head of the sawyer, and I send that sawyer off into the desert, you see, what it means is that these sins are extraneous to Klal Yisrael. They're extraneous. You take them, remove them, and ship them off. If it's intrinsic, if it's a part of the person's nature, you can't do that. Because it's a part of the person. You can't simply remove it and put it on the sawyer and ship it off. But the idea of shipping off the averos reflects the concept that these averos, these sins, are really not tied integrally to the nature of the people. See? But it's extraneous to them. It's extraneous. That's why you could say you can send them away. Now the question is, Which means, of course, what does it mean actually? Extraneous. By extraneous means that it's extraneous in a certain sense. I want you to understand. It's extraneous in a certain sense. You see, a person feels. You see, the mistake a person makes really is that he thinks, he's convinced that the way he feels, what he feels is reality. If he senses within himself that if he will now do a certain action, he's going to feel better. So he thinks that this is really an integral part of his nature. That he feels, what he feels is that learning, on the contrary, learning to him feels, doing mitzvahs and learning feels like it's not a natural part of his nature. He feels he has to fight his nature really to do that. You see, not saying that once he's involved in it that he doesn't experience a great joy, really the greatest joy he experiences. But on the first move, there's a resistance there. No. He feels like he wants the physical enjoyments. You see, the mistake that a person makes when he believes his emotions, he's convinced that his emotions are telling the truth, is that this is really his nature. See, and that's why since he thinks it's his nature, he follows it, because he feels that this is actually going to give him satisfaction, and this is going to satisfy, because this is really him. But the truth of the matter is, he's making a mistake, because while the drive is extremely powerful, and there's no question about it, the emotional drive is extremely powerful, that really isn't his true underlying nature, because his true underlying nature is really tied to that part of him that perceives chachma, and that is his true underlying nature. And as powerful as the emotions are, the true underlying nature is in a sense even more powerful. I one time spoke about that, the difference between the two. At first the emotions are more powerful, but in the long run it's the mind that's more powerful, because the fact that a person can analyze his emotions shows you that his mind can overpower the emotions. Ultimately the mind is victorious, you see. But the emotions have the best shot, the first chance. First, in the Mishkol Rishon, first time, the emotions have it. There's no question about it, because the power that they devolve upon the person with, and the speed, you see, gives them a certain superiority. But in the long run, it really is the Tzelem Elokim that actually prevails and can subdue the emotions. Of course it takes time, and that's really where tshuva comes in, because tshuva is the means. What is tshuva really? Tshuva really is the means it's the modus operandi for the Tzelem Elokim. It's the mode of operation for the Tzelem. The Tzelem Elokim can't work on the first time there's an involvement, the first action can't. It doesn't have the ability, because the emotions are too powerful and too quick. But when a person recoils, removes himself from the situation, and he thinks over what happened, then his mind has the ability to put things in order slowly, and once it does, it's very very strong, stronger than the emotions. But to assert itself, it takes a long time. It's weak in asserting itself, but once it does assert itself, it's stronger than the emotions. Now, the underlying nature of man, really, according to Yadis, is tied to the mind, to this Tzelem Elokim that could recognize the difference between truth and falsehood. But of course, there's another part of his nature. But that's what the pasuk tells us. That other part of our nature really is extraneous. It's non-essential. Because if it is essential, tshuva is impossible. Because what are you going to do tshuva? It's impossible. So the only way a person can do tshuva is by maintaining that really there's another part that's more essential than the emotional part of man, the part that's responsible for his chait. And that part is extraneous and is capable of being shipped off. It's outside the real depths of the human personality. The bottom line of the human personality is the person wants to do good. And that's the famous Rambam when Gittin, and he gives the person malchus until he says he wants to do it. But he doesn't want to do it. And he's only doing it under coercion?
No.
He really wants to do it? Aye, how come he requires so much convincing with Malchus until he says he wants to do it? Yeah, it's very hard to convince him. But once you do convince him, what he's really saying is, his underlying personality, which is that he wants to do what is good. He wants to do the good. The only thing is that he doesn't have a fair chance because the emotions are very powerful. So the Malchus, the Rambam explains, reduces the emotions, and it gives the good part an even chance. Then the good part expresses itself spontaneously. And he wants to do it. That's it. So really, what? That's what the pasuk is saying. The Nosar Sawyer Olav Eskolav Onosam Alaris Gizera. Yeah. But what exactly? Let's understand though. What does it mean? Now let's go back. What does it mean by this bribe that we give Samoil? Samoil, of course, we recognize as the force in man that drives him, the force of the fantasies that drives him to do that which is not in line with reality. That's what Samoil represents. Now how do you appease Samoil? That's the question. What does it mean you appease Samoil? The answer is like this. See? The answer is, first of all, we have to lay down one premise. The kapara sayom of Yom Kippurim is different than the kapara of any other carbon. Because the kapara of any other carbon is a kapara for a particular action. Particular maisa avera. He's a chayav chatas. Because he did a maisa achilas chaylev. Or whatever. Any avera sheyesh bizdori karas. So the shegig has a kapara through a carb, but the kapara of Yom Kippurim, what I think is the most essential concept in the kapara of Yom Kippurim, the difference between kapara of Yom Kippurim and other kaparas is that the kapara of Yom Kippurim is tied to the gavra. It's tied to the entire gavra. It's not just a kapara for a particular ma'aseh avera, like another carb, but it's a kapara that's tied to the very essence of the nature of the gavra. You see, it's a kapara for the whole gavra. Yes, machapro li averis kalas chamuris. No, but why is it machapro like that? Why is it just such a broad sweep? Why is there such a kapara of such a broad sweep that it's machapro li averis? One minute with one carbon. Why? The answer is, it's not a multiplication of individual kaparas. It is a kapara that relates to the very essence of the gavra. The essence of the person, and that's why all the averis are gone. You see, but it's not a multiplication of kabonis. It's not one kabonis, there's one carbon that contains in it a multiplicity of kaparis. It's a carbon which is tied to Yom Kippurim, the kedushas of Yom Kippurim, and which relates to the very essence of the gavra. Okay, it relates to. That's why it's so different than every other carbon. That premise we must have. Yes, action. There's a kapara for a particular action. And there's a kapara for a person's entire
way of life.
It's the whole essence of his being, you see. And the kapara sayom of Yom Kippurim is tied to the very essence of his being. But now, what I want to say is, let's get back to the Sora Mishtaleach. The Sora Mishtaleach has an idea, contains a sod upon which this whole kapara sayom is based. And without it, there is no kapara sayom. What is this sod? Okay. Part of the sod we already explained. That is that the chait is an extraneous phenomena, extraneous to the nature of the person. But the second thing is, we have to understand, what is this bribery to Samoil? How do you bribe Samoil? We have to understand what if we didn't bribe Samoil? What would we do if we didn't bribe Samoil? What would we do if we didn't bribe Samoil? If we didn't bribe Samoil, it means we would not have a Sora Lazazel. Which means we would not. What does the Sora Lazazel represent? The Sora Lazazel represents. It's a strange phenomenon. Why is it a strange phenomenon? Because what it does is it acts out, in essence, what happens in a person's life. You see, if he follows the road to Samoil, that's what it is. Because it tells you the man follows his fantasies, he goes out in the unproductive in the realistically unproductive land. Of course, it's a land, the Midbar is also filled with Seirim. Seirim, Haliz Bechor, is Zivchein La Seirim. It means it's a place of fantasies. And the desert, while it's very desolate, also is a place of fantasies. So it represents two things. In reality, it's desolate. In reality, it's desolate. But in the person's mind, it can generate tremendous fantasies. So he follows his fantasies in the desert, and suddenly reality breaks in, and he's over the cliff. All right? So what does that mean, really? That means that we paid off some oil. How do we pay off some oil? If we wouldn't pay off some oil, we would never permit the person to follow the road to some oil. That's what it means. It's very simple. Just think about it logically. When you bribe some oil, it means you give him his due. It means that the Torah sets up this road to some oil. It's true, the road, he winds up over the cliff, but that's reality. But the fact is that the carbon is set up in a way that the Torah has actually established a path to some oil and made it a carbon. How could the road? It's true, the road leads to destruction. It's true, but you cannot have a road to some oil in a carbon. That's a horrible thing. You see. So what does the Torah show you by this? What does the Torah say? The Torah says no. On the contrary, on Yom Kippurim, instead of you want tahara, person wants tahara, and the fact that the tahara is really in the kapara, is a kapara of the gavra. And what actually, the fact that I'm telling you it's a kapara gavra is nothing new. How do you know from the Torah it's a kapara gavra? Very simple possible. L'fnei Hashem t'tara. What does it mean, l'fnei Hashem t'tara? L'fnei Hashem t'tara means it's more than just a kapara for a particular averus. But actually it's a whole process of tahara, a special relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, which results in kapara. Alright? So what is that? How do we do it? We do it like this. Instead of denying our tendencies towards Samuel, see, it's an interesting thing. The Medrash says that Samuel comes and tells God, look, you have this nation, and you take a look at this nation. On Yom Kippur, they're standing just like Malachim. Yeah, one day a year, big deal. Well, so what? So one day a year. So what? So are you going to fool God? So God's not going to remember what happens the other 364 days? Yeah, what does that mean? What does it mean? How does that work? The answer is like this. The answer is that what Yadis does with the Sar Lazazel is, rather than deny our tendencies towards the road to Samuel, because we're overcome with that, with those tendencies. The emotions are too powerful. But what do we say? We say, we recognize one thing, that these emotions are powerful, and that we go towards Samuel, but we recognize that the road to Samuel eventuates in total destruction. We recognize that idea, but we don't deny the road to Samuel that we travel. But what do? We travel there, yes, but we know, we recognize that this road leads to destruction. So what does that show? Rather than deny, you see, our tendencies to Samuel, we give Samuel his due. What does it mean we give Samuel his due? We recognize that we travel that road towards Samuel. But we recognize that the end of the road is where reality eventually breaks through and he falls over the cliff. And there's nothing, he can't be involved in his fantasies in the desert anymore. You see? So once, when a person does that, that recognition, you see, is the recognition which makes the chait extraneous to the human personality. Because man recognizes that he unfortunately travels on the road to Samuel. You see. But the thing is that this road eventuates in falling over the cliff. He recognizes that. And that is the special uniqueness of the Kedusha Sayom of Yom Kippur. Then what does Samuel say? That's what it means. What it means is like this. That the moment we chart the course, the path to Samuel, it's interesting, it says, V'shilach v'yad ishiti. What's the ishiti? Ishiti is the person that's mezuman, that's prepared. That's another point. What it's trying to say is that the moment the person embarks on that course, the sawyer is getting ready to be sent from before, because Yom Ad Chai means he's ready to be discharged. But then the Shilach B'Yadishiti means the man is already prepared and takes this right into the desert, right over the cliff. It means that his route isn't accidental that he goes over the cliff. That's why the Pasuk says, V'shilach b'yadish iti hamidbara. Because we recognize that it's predetermined. Iti means mezuman. All the Mefarshim say, Ish iti means mezuman. It means he was prepared from the day before. It means that this course, the moment he embarks on this course, people have a tendency to think it's haphazard. Oh, maybe I'll make it. Look, who knows for sure. No, it's destined. This man will lead this goat straight to the cliff. There's no way that it's going to avoid. You see, it's death. It's confrontation with reality. So when we recognize that, see, through the recognition of what happens in our travels towards some Moel, we can't obliterate those travels. The Jews come before God in Yom Kippurim, can't do it. It's impossible. They can't change the facts. The facts are that they're under the sway of some oil. So what could they do on Yom Kippurim? Not deny, like other nations do. They deny the reality of their path. But on the contrary, recognize this as part of their emotional makeup and recognition of the fact that it leads to total destruction. That's the first step. You see? Then it says Samuel turns around and he says to God, he says, you have a nation that are like the Malachi Asharis. What does it mean that they're like the Malachi Asharis? It means once the Jews recognize this, so then Yom Kippurim, and that's really the idea of Yom Kippurim. What could one day do? A person's going to make a change in one day? No, the answer is in one day is one day of reality. Yom Kippurim is the day that a person stands before God like a malach. It means to say, for one day he takes off the shackles of some oil. And he recognizes the fact that these emotions that he's involved in, and his fantasies, are driving him over the cliff. And that day, he's like a malach olakim. It's true, he hasn't reached the level of truly of a malach, because a malach is free from the power of these emotions. But insofar as he recognizes the emotion, insofar as he understands that this is really not his true nature, and he recognizes what his underlying nature is, and he recognizes what the road to some oil leads to, insofar as that is concerned, that moment of recognition, he's kamalach olakim. That's what it means. What it means is, the sod is, that through, how do we bribe some oil? We bribe some oil means we give him his due. We recognize, we don't deny. We don't deny our involvement in some oil. You see, the sor lazazel is a person's involvement in some oil. We don't deny it. But what we recognize is the results of it. That's the first, that step is the most basic step. And that step is the underlying, that concept is the underlying concept of the whole Kedushas Hayom of Yom Kippurim. Without that concept, there's no Yom Kippurim. You see. And that's why we hold, the Rambam maintains that the Sora Lazazel could be Mechaper even without Tshuva. How is it possible? It doesn't make any sense. No tshuva, person's aimed b'marda, he's still going to do the averus. And yet there's a kapara. How could you have a kapara? It doesn't make any sense. What's the answer? The answer is because the mere recognition of the fact that his evil tendencies, his fantasies that are driving him, eventuate in the reality of total destruction through the Sor Lazazel, that's a mechaper. God considers that a kapar. That alone, that concept is enough to be mechaper. Even though the man did not say at this point that he's never going to do the Maisa Aver again. Doesn't matter. Because since he recognizes that this is really false, a false part of his personality, and this moment on Yom Kippurim, the man is in contact with his true nature, with true reality, momentarily in contact, that is mechaper. And that's why Rebbe holds that Yom Kippurim is mechaper. Because Rebbe maintains the whole machlokes between Rebbe and between the Chacham is a question. Ram doesn't paskin like Rebbe, because Rebbe maintained that every Yom Kippurim is like that. The Rambam says no. It's only if you have a Sor Lazazel. Only if there's a Sor Lazazel, then is it possible to have such a type of a kapara through the concept of recognition of the of what chait really is. The root of chait. But if you don't have the soul lazazel, the yarek from alone can't do it. Whereas Rebbe maintained, no. You see, it's not such an impossible concept. Rebbe said, so the soul lazazel, it's true. The soul lazazel isn't here. But nevertheless, that's the nature of the kaparas hayom. That's the nature without the soul lazazel. But the Rambam held, no. It's only if they have the soul lazazel, then it casts this type of reflection on the nature of the Kedushas Hayom, and the Kedushas Hayom is a different one, and it's machaper for, and it's machaper even without tshuva. That's how the Rambam paskens. You must have the Sora Lazazel. So therefore, you see, we could understand the other question we raised. The question was, what does Rabbi Kiva mean? Ashreichem Yisrael. He says you're very fortunate. The Jews are very fortunate. Lefnei mi atem mitarim, mi b'tareicha. Everybody's matar before God. The answer is, but there's one difference, because the pasuk says, Adam. The pasuk says, Adam ki yomos ba'ohel. The person dies in a room. So halacha is that anyone who walks into the room becomes tummy, because under the halachas of tumah, he's in the same ohel. If you're in the same ohel, under the same tent with somebody in the same room with a mace, so you become tummy. But halacha is, it's only a Jew. A guy is not matame ba'ohel. Not matame ba'ohel. See? So what's the reason? So the Chazal say, because it says, Adam kiyomas ba'ohel. If a man dies in a tent, Atam kriyam Adam. You are considered Adam, but the other nations are not considered Adam, not considered man. What does that mean? What does it mean to say? It means to say, so you see there's a distinction. What it means to say is, that is the distinction. That is the distinction. The distinction, it doesn't mean that no other human being can recognize God. It's true, but it'll be only very few. Very rare. Yechidim. Very few Yechidim in the world that ever came to the true recognition. But in the Jews, as a nation, they can't do it. As a nation, however, the Jews are the only ones that are capable of recognizing that their underlying nature is of a different sort than that which propels them and drives them all throughout the year, all the fantasies that they have. You see, and they recognize that the fantasies are extraneous to their nature. So once they recognize that, you see, then they could be in contact they can come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the secret of their closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Sora Mishtaleach is the secret and the basis of their closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it says Ashreichem Yisrael lefnei mi atem matarim, because others aren't on the level that they could be matar, because they don't have the underlying thesis, which is that the concept of Kedushas Yisrael, which is based upon the idea, the recognition that the part of them that is chait is extraneous. V'nasa osam al rosh ha-soyer. They could give due to some oil. The Jewish nation can recognize Samoel. And through that recognition, they can come to an understanding of their own nature, and then they're close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is Lefnei Hashem Tetaro. That's why you can have Lefnei Hashem Tetaro. Without the Sora Mishtaleach, without the concept of the Sora Mishtaleach, there is no Lefnei Hashem Tetaro. There's no admission and recognition of the road that a person is taking, of what he's, how he's going forth towards Samoel. And there's no ability to simultaneously recognize that he's on that path, and yet that same path contains in it the destruction, inevitable destruction. If he doesn't have that ability, then there's no Lefnei Hashem Tetaro. That's really the soda of the Lefnei Hashem Tetaro. Once he has that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at Klal Yisrael and he says that these people are like Malachim. In that sense, they're like Malachim, because now conceptually they've really removed from themselves the extraneous chait, at least momentarily in terms of their ideational content, you see. So then they're on a level where they're capable. Then God says, V'chipra al migdash al mizbeach al kohanim al kolam al kol yechapa. And immediately God gives a kapara. The kapara is for the entire Klal Yisrael, because they came to their recognition. And even if they didn't do tshuva, as long as there was the Sora HaMishtaleach, it's mechaper on the assay and the los assays, shame bam karas. That's what the that's the soda sar mishaleach. What I'd say is, yes.
once said before.
So it's an interesting thing. So you have these twin karbonas. What are these? What? That's why they're twin karbonas. See why they're twin karbonas? Because it means like this. It means that they're both exactly the same. Which means to say, what does it mean that they're both exactly the same? It means that they're both one carbon. But this, conceptually, they're one carbon Lashem. You see, they're one carbon. They're an offering to God, which is tied to the whole essence of the human personality. But the thing is, unfortunately, if you're going to have a carbon that represents the essence of the human personality, you have to split it off. Because the human personality is unfortunately one part of them is going in the wrong direction. See, so if you want to have the total picture, so you can't have just one carbon. But in order to have one carbon, you must have two. You see, you must have two. They both must be the same because that shows the fact that they're really one offering. The only thing is that there's two parts of his nature split off. Why do you use a goro? Why do you use a goro? Because what you want, first of all, if you wouldn't use a goro, so it means that each one would be designated Lazazo, one would be designated Lashem. That would be two separate kabbonis already. You see, it would be two separate kabbonis. The reason why the goro differentiates is because by the goro differentiating, you have brought them as one. You have brought them as one entity. You see, and they're both exactly the same. But now the girl differentiated because one part of the personality goes this way, one part of the personality goes the other way. That's what the matter says. The Sawyer Lashem is you can only have the Sawyer Lashem because of the Sawyer Lazazel. But you can't designate the Sawyer Lazazel. Designating the Sawyer Lazazel would mean that it's a separate carbon, you see. That's impossible. It's really one carbon. But the only thing is, how are you going to break it off? How are you going to do it? The answer is girl. This girl decides this part of the carbon goes here, that part goes here. It's just the girl. This goes here, that's right. This goes here, this goes there. But the designation is one designation. That's why you have that's the concept of Hagrola. Wow, the Havos Hagavra has got to be for one, because both represent the total picture of the human personality. In order to have the Sawyer Lashem, you've got to have the recognition of Samoil. You must have the recognition of Samoil. But of course, if you designated two carbonas, first of all, the Ramban gives a reason which also is true, that you can't designate a carbon for some oil. That would be sacrilege. That would be a avodah zara. Designate a carbon avodah zazel. That's impossible. So therefore, it's only through agrola that you could do it. But there's something else in agrola. The fact that you don't determine shows you that your avodah is that they're one. Now they splinter off. One part of the personality goes this way, one part goes the other way. So the natural process of Hagrola. See, but not through the actual determination of the one who's bringing the carbon.
Yeah, because if you do that...
It's the recognition of Samoil that saves the carbon Lashem, the girl Lashem. That's what the Medrash explains. You see. Now the Ibn Ezra... When the Ibn Ezra mentions the... he says, when you're 33 years old, you'll recognize it. What he means is he's referring to what the Ramban says, referring to the Se'irim. You see, what is the Se'irim? What is the Se'irim really? He's saying the same thing, but he's more specific. What are these Se'irim? He says it's a reflection to the Se'irim in the desert. The Pasuk says, "V'lo yizbuchu odes ifcheim la Se'irim ashehim zonim achareim." What are the Se'irim? The Se'irim represents the primitive part of man, his primitive nature, avodah zara. The Torah took man from a primitive state and brought him into the Beis HaMikdash and showed him kabbonis. Yeah, kabbonis, very nice. But you have to have it has to be a halachic system. It has to be done according to Seichel, according to Chachmas HaLakim. But just following a person's emotions, which are basically the sacrifices of the other nations. And the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim says the greatest sin of the Jews was Lasirim, that they were Pona Lasirim. That means to say, because the greatest sin of the Jews is the fact that their primitive nature, they're rooted in the primitive, and they can't rise above the primitive. That's really the essence of chait. That's the chait ego. That's the whole concept. So that's the Ibn Ezra is just pointing a little bit more towards what precisely is the nature of the chait. Nature of the chait is las irim, projection of a person's emotions onto reality. and creating systems of worship, which is based upon his own nonsensical fantasies and not upon reality. That's what the Sawyer Lazuzel is machaper for. I would say one thing, that what we're saying is, in just to add a proof from a halachic standpoint, what we're saying is very much in line with what Rabban Soloveitchik mentioned in his shir in halacha, because the Rambam paskins that Yom HaKippurim Paskin is not like Rebbe, which means that Yom HaKippurim is not machaper unless you have tshuva. Nevertheless, by the Sor La Zazel, he paskins that it's machaper even without tshuva. But this is very difficult, because there's a Gemara in Shavuos that doesn't let it work, doesn't permit it to work out. Why? Because the Gemara in Shavuos is like this. Gemara in Shavuos says, what do you need to saw by the Sor La Zazel? If he did tshuva, it's machaper anyways. If he didn't do tshuva, so then he can't, the Sor La Zazel can't work, because there's a pasuk that says Zevach Hashem Toeva, right? Which means to say, if you're a Rasha, so then your carbon's worthless. Okay, so the Gemara says that no, it's going according to Rebbe, who holds that Yom HaKippurim is machaper. All right, and the Gemara says, no, you understand the question? So the question is, how could the Sor La Zazel be machaper even without tshuva on an asay memanafshach? If he does tshuva, so you'll need a salzel. If he doesn't do tshuva, so then it's zevach shem toeva. So the Gemara says, no, it's going according to Rebbe, who holds that Yom HaKippurim is machaper. What's the Gemara's answer? The Gemara's answer is that since Rebbe maintains Yom HaKippurim is machaper, so therefore in Yom Kippur, he's not a rush anymore, because Yom Kippur was machaper for him. Now the Sor La Zazel, now he's ready for the Sor La Zazel. Okay? Yeah. But the question is, according to the Rambam, it's not going to work out. Why? Because the Rambam doesn't paskin like Rebbe. So now it comes out that he's in Russia. So how does the Sor La Zazel work? How does the Sor La Zazel work? So what's the answer? So the answer is that actually the Sor La Zazel is a machaper. But the Sor La Zazel is machaper in the framework of Yom HaKippurim. Because you saw from this Medrash that it uses its machaper not by itself. It's machaper through the medium of Yom HaKippurim. Because the Medrash says that, what is this? What does Samuel say? Samuel says to God, no, now I see this is a nation that's really like Malachim. Because essentially they have the recognition. Their underlying desire and recognition is for the good. They recognize the good. They're really Malachim. This moment they're Malachim on Yom HaKippurim. So that shows you one thing. That shows you the Sora Mishtaleach, really, is machaper not by itself, but it's machaper through the medium of Yom HaKippurim. So therefore, even though he doesn't hold like Rebbe, but when you bring the Sor HaMishtaleach, you see, the Yom HaKippurim is Mechaper. It's one entity. You can't separate the Sor HaMishtaleach from Yom HaKippurim, and it's one Kapara, which does not require Tshuva. So he's not considered a Rasha, because the Yom HaKippurim itself is a Mechaper. The Yom HaKippurim, once, and that's why it's Mechaper also, he mentioned the Sor HaMishtaleach Machaper even after the even if Eretz did after the Gemara says after Akrovas HaSor, because the medium through which it works is Yom HaKippurim, and therefore it's Machaper. As long as you have Yom HaKippurim, it's a Machaper, you see, and there's no psul anymore of Zevach Hashanah Toeva. Yes, qualification could be says qualification in Yom, it's possible. Or perhaps no, perhaps it's, well, actually the concept philosophically has a halachic framework. Okay. What does everybody say when they see somebody else that has those things which their fantasies would tell them is olam haba, and then they see that the person doesn't have such a good life? He's unlucky that way. Well, it's a good question. Well, then why is it alone? See? I would say this much. That what does Samuel really want? What does Samuel want from a person? What does a Samuel present a person with? The last thing in the world that Samuel wants or offers us, the last thing that Samuel offers us is loneliness. That's the last thing in the world. Loneliness. To be alone. See? Because Samuel offers a person a false idea of success. There's a true idea of success, but there's a false idea of success. The false idea of success that Samuel offers is always surrounded by clamor. The clamor of people, say, acceptance of people, recognition of people. That's what Samuel offers a person. And Samuel does not offer the person alone, being alone in the Midbar. And Moshe Rabbeinu was alone in the Midbar. He was thinking of Torah. But the person, what Samuel offers, is not loneliness. On the contrary, the clamor of humanity behind the successful person. That's what Samuel offers a person. Two things I'd say actually three things that Samuel offers a person. That's one thing Samuel offers a person. Another thing that Samuel entices a person is with comforts. That's another very big thing. Comforts is an important thing that Samuel offers a person. Samuel tries to tempt people by telling them they'll have a comfortable life, a comfortable existence. And that's why the way he dies is a brutal death, painful. It's something when a person thinks of that type of death, or certainly Bizman Shebeis Mikdash Kayam, when it actually took place, it brings to mind the most painful type of experience that a person can have. But that's precisely what why the goat is killed. To bring that experience to the mind of a person, so they should have that recognition. That on the contrary, he thinks that he's going for comforts. He's heading for the most painful type of experience. And the third thing that Samuel offers, maybe the most powerful of all, is the fantasy of immortality. That's the greatest fantasy that Samuel offers a person. And that's the cliff, clearly represents where that fantasy winds up on the rocks of the cliff of the Tzuk. That's true, yeah, crazy people move out to the desert because that's where they could live with their fantasies. They don't have to confront any reality.
I just want to
wish everybody a good night. Yeah, there's one, by the way, that also explains something else. Why is it that Aseret Yemei Tshuva is really an introduction to Yom Kippur, culminates in Yom Kippur. That's why Aseret Yemei Tshuva, it says a person should be knowing Chumras on Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Why should we know Chumras on Aseret Yemei Tshuva? Because just like on Yom Kippurim, he acts like a malach, you see. So really, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, there has to be that concept. It's not an idea that he's fooling God. The concept is that he's acting like a malach with regard to, like a pasak, mizvah paspal.
Since we lost, so if it wasn't an honest, I can't be asked from the shots.
The only thing I wanted to add was that the Yom HaKippurim is not a specific kapara of specific kabbonis, but it really is based upon a whole relationship with God. It's based on Lefnei Hashem Tataru, because halachically you see the Kohen Gadol kol avodas yom lo yikshirim elabo, all the avodas that Kohen Gadol had to do, even the tumit. If it was just a matter of kabbonis, then the Kohen Gadol would only have to do those kabbonis that have to do with the avodas Yom Kippurim. You see, right? He'd have to do the par, the sar b'fnim, the he'd have to do the what do you call it, the elim shnei elim. But why does he have to do the tumid and the musaf? You see, and not only that, but if it's chal on Shabbos, he has to do the shnei kvasim. You see. So what's the reason? Because the reason is because it's not just the kapara, that the kabbonis are machaper, but the whole day reflects a certain relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kol Yisrael. You see? And that's why everything that's done on that day must be done only through the Kohen Gadol. Because the whole Avodas Hayom is a machaper. There's an overall kapara, which is, there's specific machaperim, you have this carbon machaper for this, that carbon machaper for that, but there's an overall kapara sayom that takes place, comes about through the whole avoda sayom. We said this when we learned the Gemara and Yuma, but you can see philosophically really why it is that way. That's why the Kohen Gadol has to do every single avoda that's done in the Mikdash on that day. If it's Shabbos, he has to do the olas of Shabbos, you see? That's a lot. It must be done with Kohen Gadol to share that the Kapara Sayom takes place through the concept of the entire Avodah Sayom being a part of the Kapara. Because it represents the relationship of the entire Yom, this very day, to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And between the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Israel. Okay.
Say the Tefillah Siyachah is the main Tefillah. Right?
That's why it's Shabbat.
Also, another question we wanted to answer was, according to Tyson, the bottom says, Afilu lefima shepirish am shebesodas shishom mishleach tzibur yotz, and that's in the bottom of Tyson, that's going to the same Shavain Ryan Mekan. He says, I will deal low. Yesh lechalek bein hechad the espalo v'tol, hechad the low espalo klav. What's the difference between a person who's espalo v'tol and a person who's low espalo klav? What's the difference between these two cases? I mean, he wasn't espalo. Yet to say that he tried is not really the... Okay. So the thing is like this, that we have to understand clearly, so like this.